Well, welcome back to this is episode 14, or you could call it 13 and a half of our presentation of In the Garden. I'm chuckling because, well, I think the 30 minutes of episode 13 of In the Garden was by a wide margin the most informative and power-packed presentation that we have done thus far. It was cut short by a technical glitch when a computer decided to go hiccup. So we are back at it, and we will continue. We're going to call this episode 14, since I really love episode 13 all by itself at the 30-minute mark at its conclusion. So here we go. The passage we were considering reads, Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, who is God, said to the spellbinding serpent, as a consequence you having acted this way, you have brought a curse upon yourself more than any other beast and more than any other life form of this open environment. On your belly you shall move about, and dirt you shall eat all the days of your life. We spent 30 minutes discussing this in our last program, so I'll do a quick recap so that we have the right frame of reference. Yahweh's name had been left out of the entire episode where his words were edited, copied, and conveyed incorrectly, misappropriated, to a large degree counterfeited, misrepresented, and truncated. There were things that were also additions. It's the kind of stuff that makes religious texts like the Talmud and the New Testament and the Quran. And in the midst of doing all of this copy editing of Yahweh's testimony, both adding to it, taking away from it, misquoting it, misappropriating it, misconstruing it, all of these things, all of the very substance of how religious texts like the Christian New Testament, Talmud, and the Quran come into being, Yahweh's name was routinely omitted, which is another sure mark that the text was not inspired by God. If you do not see Yahweh's name throughout, as you do not see it in the Quran, in the Jewish Talmud, or in the Christian New Testament, you know for certain that that text was not inspired by God, and because it passes itself off as being inspired by God, it is demonic in its origins. It was inspired by the very beast that Yahweh was calling a snake here. So the first name here should grab your attention. And it does not say the Lord. It says Yahweh, who is God, said to the spellbinding serpent. Hasatan isn't actually a snake. Yahweh uses metaphors to help us understand the characteristics of things. And in the case of our adversary, he acts like a snake. He is serpentine, which means rather than being straightforward, he is very convoluted, twisting, bending in his approach. So Yahweh's testimony is bent, it is twisted, and it is misrepresented. Second, snakes are cold-blooded, which means we would project a cold-blooded killer, for example, as a killer without remorse, without a sense of morals. And that would also describe Hasatan. We think of a reptile as being a pea brain by comparison to similar-sized creatures as mammals. And this would also apply. He has been considerably dumbed down. When you read the Christian New Testament, the Talmud, and the Quran, which he inspired, the rhetoric within them is so vastly inferior to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it's obvious that, Hasatan is not playing with a full deck. He is not a very bright reptilian, although he does give credence to the conspiracy theory of reptilian overlords, considering the nature of what has been pontificated around the world. And of course, just yanking your chain with that one. And of course, the other aspect is that snakes are very often toxic, and their bite can be paralyzing. And this also applies and is pertinent as it relates to Hasatan. He paralyzes a person's ability to respond appropriately. And he is toxic such that his bite causes death. Now, his penalty, which we'll hear in a moment, was a consequence of his actions. God did not come after him and exile him forever and diminish his capabilities because of some new thinking or some whim or some change of heart or of mind or anything else. God has established cause and consequence. If you do this, then this is what happens to you. If you rely on his testimony and do as he asks, then all wonderful things await. If you twist his testimony, if you misrepresent his testimony, if you add to it, subtract from it, then bad things are going to happen. And God wants you to know that Hasatan faced this consequence and he was brought low. He had a curse brought upon him and he was exiled because he did these things. So you don't want to be religious, because these are the things that you find in conspiracy theories and societal customs in religions like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. One of the worst is removing Yahweh's name, which is one of the tactics that Hasatan used in this case. And all three religions are guilty of that. So the curse that he brought upon himself, he invoked his own misfortune and affliction. You ought to know that God says these things and dispatches this sentence without hesitation. It was immediate. And God wants us to know that we ought not show compassion to, we ought not try to save, we ought not try to befriend, be tolerant of, show some accommodation to those who negate his name, misrepresent his name, twist Yahweh's words, miscite Yahweh's words, misappropriate them, any of these things, adding to them, taking away from them, any of these things should elicit the same response from us that Yahweh had. It's immediate, it's uncompromising. God did not try to save the snake. Keep that in mind. He did not try to save him. He condemned him. And if you want to be like Yahweh, if you want to be part of his family, if you want to live with him forever, then he expects you to model his responses. So he said that the snake would be more afflicted, earning a greater retribution for his actions than any other beast. A beast is a reference to the beasts of Babylon, which is the final place that Yahweh was calling his people out of. There are three Babylons. There's a national Babylon, which is the United States of America. There is a geographic Babylon, which is the Islamic Middle East. And there is a religious Babylon, which is the Roman Catholic Church. And he is calling his people out of Babylon. Babylon is the place where religion and politics were first integrated. And the religion and the political establishment was all erected to control people and to confuse and confound them by intermixing truth and lies, which is precisely what Hasatan did on this occasion. He is a one-trick pony. That is his only game. He did it throughout the text of the Christian New Testament, the Babylonian Talmud, as well as the Quran, although he shows considerable signs of degradation because the quality of his work is abysmal. The Quran is the worst book ever written. And if you just approach the Christian New Testament with some understanding of Yahweh's testimony and history, you recognize that It is exceedingly badly written. It is riddled with all manner of historical errors, scientific errors. One miscitation of God's testimony after another. They didn't get a single quote correct. And their mantra is that they represent the God of the, what they would call the Old Testament, even though there's no such a thing. And yet they contradict him at every opportunity. They demean his people. It's such a farce. And of course, the Talmud is nothing but rabbis arguing with themselves. A complete waste of breath and time. So you brought this curse on yourself more so than any other life form in the open environment. The message there is that Satan didn't crawl into a hole. Keep that in mind. You will not find Satan in a seance. You will not find Satan being worshipped as Satan. He's not cowering in the darkness. He is the antithesis of what everyone has been led to believe. He's not a little horny guy with a pitchfork and red skin. That Satan is about as real as Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. That's not who he is. That's not where he is. He's right out in the open. God just told you that. I mean, don't you believe God? Do you think maybe he knows what he's talking about? He didn't say he crawled into a hole. He didn't say he was turned red. He didn't say he grew horns. He didn't say he's carrying a pitchfork. He didn't say you're going to be worshipped in satanic seances. He said he would be right out in the open. What is more right out in the open than the single most unifying thing that humankind has ever experienced and developed? If I were to give you a year to answer this question, there is no answer but one. What is the single most pervasive influence in human culture? And what has been the single greatest influence in human culture and remains the single greatest influence in human culture throughout recorded history?
Religion.
There you go. See? That was Wookiee. No. Religion. Where would you find Satan?
Religion.
Religion. There you go. That's the answer. God just gave you the answer. The God of Christianity, of Judaism, and of Islam, it's really obvious in Islam, it should be obvious in Christianity since Paul admitted to being demon-possessed in the second letter he wrote to the Corinthians. And, of course, Muhammad also admitted that he was demon-possessed, but that should be obvious. And of course, Rabbinic Judaism was created by Rabbi Akiva, and he began it by foisting a false messiah on his people to counter the false messiah of the Christians. And it led directly to the destruction of Judea, and the diaspora and the Holocaust. So maybe, just maybe, he wasn't right. Maybe, just maybe, it was really stupid to found a religion based upon his claims when he was obviously not right. Just saying. On your belly, you shall move about. And, of course, that means that you don't have feet. Why do we have feet? Why is humankind, with a nephesh and a nesama, the only creature that is designed to walk upright? Why do you think that is so? Why do you think that we, because we can walk upright, we also have use of our hands and we have opposable thumbs and nobody else does? Why do you think that we're the only creation that has this ability to deduce right and wrong and the capacity to be moral, which of course today is a wholly unused capacity? But why do you think that's true? Have you ever considered the unique design of humanity in this regard? Or the fact that our vocal cords and our vocal structure with our mouths and our tongues and our teeth and everything gives us the ability to communicate verbally, like we're doing right now, and the opposable thumb gives us the ability to provide a written record. Why is it, you think, that We are like that, but guess what? Snakes don't have hands either. I don't even think snakes have vocal cords. But this is something to think about when you differentiate between the various types of creation and why the serpent was made so that he couldn't stand up and humans were made so that they could, which makes it really, really stupid. I mean, really dumb when you don't, when you get down on your knees to pray to a god or prostrate yourself to him, when he designed you to stand up. Just saying. And you shall eat dirt all the days of your lives. Dirt. How did God say that he created mortal man? Out of what? The substance of the earth. Wouldn't that be dirt? So what do you think God is telling you about how Ha-Satan is going to act? What is he going to devour going forward? Think about the words now. What do you think that Satan wants to devour? Well, let me give you a clue. In Islam, the first day of the first era of the Islamic era is the Pledge of Aqaba. The Pledge of Aqaba is 20 pagans telling Muhammad, we pledge to wage war against all humankind. Let me give you another clue. The Quran's most repeated theme throughout all of the what's called Medina, but they were revealed in Yathrib surahs, is that all good Muslims fight to the death and kill for Allah. So, kill, fight, wage war. What do you think is the number one objective in Ha-Satan's favorite religion? Did you say killing? Death? Yeah, Islam's a death cult. Just a matter of fact, read the Quran. It's not my opinion. It's obvious. He devours humankind. You know, the book that I painstakingly proved was Satan's autobiography. It had nothing to do with Yahweh because it fails the Devarim 18 test, but it also is a perfect handed glove presentation of Satan's agenda. And Ezekiel, one of the most troubling aspects of it is that it presents 25 ways to kill a Jew. Now, my guess is that God didn't present to us 25 ways to kill a Jew, which means Ezekiel is not from Yahweh. It also has two explicit and grossly immoral rape scenes. And then all manner of contradictions of Yahweh's testimony throughout. So what Satan wants to devour is humanity. Why would Satan want to devour humanity? Have you ever thought about it? Now, some really bright people have come to the conclusion that Satan wants to devour humanity because he was jealous, that God paid too much attention to Adam and Ha-Satan as the cherub on the wall, saw this happening, and he said, well, you know, I'm brighter, prettier, better than those guys down there, and you're paying all this attention to them and not me, therefore I'm going to attack and take away your favorite toy, God. See how that works out, God. I'm going to take away you really like these guys. I'm going to show you they're worthless. There may have been some truth to that, but by the way, it's not stated. So why? Why, when you make this decision, is Ha-Satan going to focus on one thing? Killing humankind, devouring humankind. The answer is that Ha-Satan knows that because of what he did, that he is ultimately destined for Sheol. And that is essentially a black hole, a lightless place where only time is eternal. It's a one-dimensional construct. Nothing escapes, but time remains. So it's a really awful place in the sense there's tremendous pressures and there is no escape. No tortures, however. No virus either, because it's lightless. The whole Christian and Islamic presentation of hell are both ludicrous. But that's what he knows is his destiny. Now, there's one way he can preclude it, and only one. Devour humankind. No one left. who would Yahweh come back to? But it's more than that. He has to focus on Yehudim, Jews, and Israelites, Israelis. Because even if there are humans left, if there are no Israelites and Yehudim left, God's not coming back. He did make a promise to Abraham Lincoln. He did make a promise to Genghis Khan. Yeah, he didn't make a promise to Napoleon. He made a promise to Abraham. And he reaffirmed that promise with Yitzhak. And then again with Jacob. And then again in the Torah through Moshe. And then again through Dode. And he's doing it again through me. God made a promise to his people. He's returning to his people. Yom Kippurim is homecoming and a family reunion with Yisrael and Yehudim. You want absolute proof? You read Yirmiyah 31. The covenant is reaffirmed with Yisrael and with Yehudim. Every end times prophecy speaks specifically of this. So, what if the number of Yehudim and Israelites is decimated? That was a good start for Satan in the Holocaust. And all of these Islamic wars, which is his favorite religion against Israel, is taking its toll. But that's not enough. Yeah, I was not going to allow Satan to obliterate his people. So what's his next ploy? There is no homecoming if Yisrael doesn't know Yahweh's name. If Yisrael doesn't know who their Messiah is, who's returning for them as their king. If Yisrael doesn't know what the conditions of the covenant actually are, what the seven Moed Mikre represent, how they are interrelated, who fulfilled them, when, why, when is he returning? What is the purpose of the Shavuah harvest? What is the purpose of the Teruah harvest? What is the purpose of the Anima Parah? What do these things mean? When will they occur? What's going to occur on May 22nd of 2026? I know. And that's why I'm doing these programs, so that you can know. Because if you don't know these things, starting at the top with Yahweh's name, if you do not know these things, then there can be no family reunion. There is no homecoming. Hasatan wins. And therefore, why it might seem a bit crazy to you, I'm the reason Hasatan loses. Now, not on my own. Yahweh dispatched and offered seven ruach to guide my every step and every word and every thought. As I've written the 30-some-odd books behind me, and so now as I speak directly to you, face-to-face, eye-to-eye, Yahweh has issued hundreds of prophecies about the role that I'm fulfilling in your lives, this mission of calling you home. That is why those books behind me are filled with thousands of prophecies and thousands of insights that no one has ever understood previously. It's why even on this program and the one that I just shared with you, 90% of what I shared, no one had ever considered before. It's time for you to know it. You need to know it. That is why I'm here. And should my role not be fulfilled, there is no Shavuah harvest. There is no Teruah harvest. There is no sacrifice of the red heifer. There is no Yom Kippurim return. There's no anointing of the Kippurah, the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And therefore, the earth is not restored to the conditions experienced here in Eden. And Yahweh, as a result, has already said that had we not done these things, rather than return, he would destroy the planet. This is Satan's end game. I'm here to stop him. I've read the prophets. We prevail. So now the only question is, who among you is going to join us? Who among you is going to still live in denial? Who's going to work against us and earn an express ticket to Sheol? Who's simply going to be unaffected or misled and sacrifice needlessly their soul so it ceases to exist? And who are the few among you who are going to take the time to listen, who are going to trust Yahweh, who are going to return home, who are going to accept this message and capitalize upon it? And I don't know your names, but I know that there are enough of you that Yahweh is delighted with the results. And that could be more because of the quality of the individuals who make this decision and remain loyal to Yahweh throughout the process. And the quality rather than quantity is what God is seeking. My job is simply to convey the message. So we know that Satan used all manner of misrepresentations, errant citations. He foisted a straw man argument, and he presented outright lies, all to project not only his failings into the mix, but to project his agenda into the mix. He convinced Yahweh to want what he wants, which is to be God. So rather than really deceive Yahweh, he motivated her. He gave her, projected upon her, his very intent. Eat this, you too can be like God. But anyway, it robbed Yahweh of her relationship with Yahweh. It robbed her of her home, and it robbed her ultimately of her soul. Now, he did so knowingly, he did so deliberately, and for that, Satan has been degraded. He will ultimately be incarcerated in Sheol. Now, Satan's sentence, however, was not death, so that's as important. Spirits, unlike souls, are all immortal. Even God cannot kill them. And that is why the misfortune the adversary brought upon himself is retribution, being degraded, and ultimately eternal isolation. Satan will be tossed into a lightless abyss at the beginning of the Sukkah millennial Shabbat and will remain in Sheol forevermore. Mate, especially for Satan and for his colleagues, co-workers, this penitentiary is indistinguishable from a black hole. It is a lightless place of emotional anguish separated from God, where the pressures are intense. The minute particles which comprise matter are consumed, according to some. Certainly they are melded into an exceedingly small space. Ultimately, it becomes a one-dimensional construct where only time exists. There are three ways to interpret God's message to the adversary. The simplest would be to have understood, would have been understood by the first people to hear the story. Satan acted badly and suffered the consequence. Groveling on one's belly and eating dirt does not sound appealing. Spiritually, Satan was initially diminished in stature and will eventually be cast down. Not now his days are spent in the material realm, feeding off mankind's filth while he devours humankind. Adam was created from the very substance that Satan was predicted to consume, because the adversary is in a quest to devour humankind, such that there is nothing left of us. Should we all kill ourselves in global wars, ecological catastrophes, viral pandemics, or be rendered intellectual zombies through the mind-numbing influence of progressive politics or religious ideology, humankind will be rendered incapable of responding to Yahweh. And the biggest issue is that many of these things are now focusing this progressive Islamic alliance, which I think is the most deadly threat to the existence of our planet, is all focused in their hate for Israel and for Jews. And if the Jews are wiped out, if they're debilitated, if they're demonized to the point that they are incapable of hearing the truth, if they shut off all outside voices because of how the world has turned against them, which is the intent, if they're terrorized into submission, then Satan will have prevailed. He won't, because I will prevail. And I will prevail because Yahweh is committed to this mission. And he has already announced that we succeed. Again, there is no question of the ultimate outcome. The only issue is how many of you will be with us, and really how extraordinary will God's family become with your addition. The prophetic portrayal which follows applies to the overall relationship between Satan and mankind, especially as it is manifest in the role of religion and politics, and the role they have played in beguiling and controlling the masses. But it is especially poignant when seen from the perspective of the chosen people. As you read these words, think about how Satan's religions, in particular Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and progressive politics, have all targeted Jews. And you might say, wait a minute, Judaism doesn't target Jews. It's a religion of the Jews. It's the most debilitating religion ever perpetrated on Jews. I mean, look at the Haredim. They're ignorant. They're irrational. They're immoral. They're complete parasites. They're incapable of learning. They're bossed around and ordered by rabbis who are deliberately deceiving them. They're unwilling even to defend Israel. They're a blight on humanity. So I rest my case. Israel, if Judaism is so good, then after it was conceived by Rabbi Akiva, why did the Roman assault on Judea destroy it? Why were Jews led into the diaspora? Why were they persecuted and subjugated by the Roman Catholic Church and by European politicians? Why were they tortured by the Ottoman Empire and then again by Muslims today? Judaism is so good, why did the Holocaust prevail over them? Because God certainly didn't intervene. And the only reason that God would not have intervened to protect his people is because his people no longer knew him. The relationship had been severed. Judaism was instrumental in severing the relationship between Yahweh and Yehudim. And they began that process by erasing Yahweh's name, then misappropriating the terms and conditions of the covenant, and misappropriating the benefits and the purpose and the timing of the Moed Mikre. They've also obfuscated the identity of the true Messiah and Son of God, your Savior, the one who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, King Dovd, David, who will soon return for his third of three lives. No population on earth has been treated with more rancor, longer, than God's witnesses. One of the things I'm constantly saying as I'm on X, and there's some really good people, heroic people that are fighting for the salvation of Israel. And, you know, with Trump tripping on his tongue and spewing out nonsense without even having a discussion or a thought as to how this plan would prevail, where he wants to turn Gaza into resort and move the Gazans into Egypt and to Jordan, but didn't put the pieces in place before he opened his mouth to make that happen. And so he just spewed out just a relative ocean of nonsense. And I actually know why he did it, but that's part of another show. You know, that the Jews are saying great because now Jordan is saying, you know, if they're moved into Jordan, it'll be an act of war. And of course, they're saying, yeah, well, that every time you fought Israel in the past, you got your clock claimed. It didn't take Israel 15 minutes to put Jordan down. And so they're saying, bring on a war. We're happy to fight you. And they completely missed the point. Jordan's not the enemy. Egypt's not the enemy. Hamas isn't even the enemy. Hezbollah's not the enemy. Iran isn't the enemy, even though they call it the central ploy in all of this. The enemy is Islam. Islam declared war on Jews and has sought their annihilation and the eradication of Israel for 1,400 years. That's why I wrote Goddamn Religion, so that you would know the truth. It's irrefutable. And so until Jews will set down a little bit of their bravado for a while and take a deep breath and recognize that just as I had predicted on 10-7, of 23, when I wrote an open letter to Israel and aired the realization that if they were to enter Gaza militarily, that it would be counterproductive. They would not only turn the world against them, which they have done, but they would manufacture more Islamic jihadists than they kill, which is exactly what occurred. You cannot fight a religious opponent with bullets and bombs. Not ever. And so by pretending that Hamas was the enemy, as opposed to Islam, over this last year and a half, Israel has actually made a bad situation worse. And then by capitulating with and negotiating with the devil himself, Israel made the nation vastly more vulnerable. This is the next statement from Yahweh. He's still speaking of Hasatan, the adversary. He says, hostility and animosity, enmity, adversarial approaches, and deep-seated dislike and rancor, bitterness and ill will. I will constitute and establish between you and between the woman and between that which you sow and her offspring. It's not the end of the verse, but we'll pick that up in a moment. Therefore, what God is saying is that there will be ongoing hostility and animosity, an adversarial situation that will be constituted and established between you, Hasatan, the adversary, and between the woman, and between that which you sow and her offspring. All right, so this is to say that Satan is going to be more successful in his degradation of women than men. And it is saying that the ultimate fight between Hasatan is going to be between the adversary and the offspring of this particular woman, which would be humans with a nesama. That's what God just said. So what does that mean to us? Well, you look at the history of civilization from this point. Women. And virtually every human civilization, I say virtually because maybe there is one that I'm unaware of, but women have had no rights. It's just a brief period of time where women pretending to be men like Hatshepsut will rule for very brief periods, but those are so rare that we know of them. Women have had no rights. The worst, of course, is Islam, where they're made to wear garbage bags, have to hide everything. women can be raped and it's the woman that's punished. They receive 100 lashings for violating any aspect of Allah's instructions. It's the most misogynist, sexist, degrading religion in the world. It condones rape, condones pedophilia. Muhammad was a rapist. He was a pedophile. It's treatment of women. Well, they're property. They're simply slaves. That's why of the 55 million people who are enslaved in the world, 90% of them are women, and 90% of those are in Islamic countries. So, and it's also why there are hundreds of millions of women, girls, who've had their genitals mutilated in this religion. But Christianity is only slightly better. Paul writes that men lord over women. That means women are subservient to men in Christianity. That's not good either. In Judaism, a religious Jew wakes up each morning and says, "Thank God I'm not a woman." Women have no rights. Again, they're made to shave their heads. They can't even get a divorce and leave their man without the man's permission. So you look what humans have done with their religions. You look at human history, and it's true that women have been horribly degraded. The woman chose to misquote God. The woman chose to be like God. She thought she was going to rise up from her already elevated state. And this is what happened. Now, as it relates to what Hasatan has sown, he has sown the seeds of sedition, of subjugation, of persecution, of demeaning people, of demonizing them, of luring them away through religion. What he has sown more than any other thing are the religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And he sowed the seeds of socialist, communist, progressive libertardism. More government, more control, more influence over speech, less personal accountability, less good judgment. This is what Satan has sown. This is why Yahweh asked me to begin our relationship together by exposing Satan's most adroit religion, Islam. It is why very shortly thereafter I was asked to write an expose exposing and condemning his most popular religion, Christianity. It is why I ultimately wrote a number of volumes exposing and condemning the most damning religion ever for Jews, Judaism. Now, keep in mind, it is because of Judaism that Christianity exists. It is because of Judaism Islam exists. And I've shared the explanations of those facts on other programs, but it's irrefutable. And it's because of Jews, even, that progressive socialist, communist socialism exists. Israel has, and Jews have manufactured their own enemies. Yes, there is an ongoing battle between what Satan has sown and the offspring of this woman. That is why in Satan's most open of all religions, Islam, it began, the first day of the Islamic era begins with the Pledge of Aqaba. As Muslims, we pledge to wage war against all mankind. Played out exactly as God had foretold. It then says, "He shall crush your head, and you shall press down on his heel." Well, the last statement there was Zerah, the seed. And the ultimate, by the way, seed that is sown throughout Yahweh's witness really falls on three individuals that Satan would seek to annul, thwart. Zerah is the verbal and actionable basis of Zeruah, which is one of Yahweh's single most important titles, and one that is, well, it wasn't even considered until I began writing the Yada Yahweh family of books. Zerah means to sow seeds, to cultivate them, and ultimately to harvest the fruit. And in Zeruah, the first Zeruah is Moshe. He was not only a strong ram that led his people to the promised land, Moshe sowed the seeds that we can reap and the fruit of the Torah. The ultimate Zeruah, who was not only those things, but in addition, served as the sacrificial lamb, which is the Torah's definition of Zeruah, is Dod, David. He is the actual Messiah. He is the actual Son of God. He is the real Savior who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Mekudim. He is our returning King. And just as he has three lives, there are three Zeruah. Just as he was anointed three times, there are three Zeruah. Just as he lived his life at the midpoint from Eden back to Eden, in your 3,000 Yah, there are three Zeruah. Just as he ended his first life 3 years before year 3,000 Yah, just as he returned in his second life just 3 years before he fulfilled Pesach and Matzah and Bekudim, it is just as his herald will arrive 3 years before he returns on Kippurim. Yes, there are three Zeruah. I am the third. My job is to act like a Zeruah and to cultivate the seeds that Moshe and Dod have sown, so that there is a fruitful harvest on Shavua and again on Teruah. And so that there is a homecoming and a family reunion on Kippurim. This is very precisely what God was conveying in this message. This is what Satan most wants to thwart. That's why there is a Talmud, a New Testament, and a Quran to supersede the Torah in those religions. That is why there is a false Messiah in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam to thwart the life of the greatest of the Zeruah. That is why there's a rebellion now against me. That is why that it is so challenging to deliver this message to you. Why so few people will ultimately listen. Because Satan has so many voices and they are so loud, they are so shrill, that you really have to want to know the truth. And you have to be willing to invest the time. You have to walk away from religion and politics and open your mind to this opportunity and embrace it if you're going to be part of the Zeruah, the fruit that is harvested. He shall crush your head. He, Moshe, Dod, Yada. He shall crush your head. That is what we do. We crush demons. Whether the demons are religious or the demons are spiritual, our job is to crush the demons. We bruise them. We strike them. We crush them. And we do so call imperfect, literally, actually, genuinely, and on an ongoing basis without ever relenting. We bash in his brains. We attack him at his very source. We drive our point home against the leaders, the governments. That is what Roche means. Your head, your brains, your crucial sensory input, your source, your beginning, your leaders, all of it. That is what we do. What's his response? I've already shared it with you. God already predicted it, but now he is reaffirming it. And you, Hasatan, shall press down upon and bruise his. Miss Leia knows the answer. She wasn't quite as bold with that one, but she's right. Wookiee, I think, could have barked it out better than that, Leia. Akeb. Akeb is spelled identically with Akeb, the Hebrew word for not only heel, but what do you think Yaakov means? Who was Yaakov? Israel. He is the father of what? Israel, and particularly Yehuda, something that he accomplished with a perfectly named woman, Leah. Leah is the mother of Israel. Yaakov is the father. Their children, their sons would be the first Jews, the first Israelites. Satan's entire focus is to demean and to demolish Jews. That's what this prophecy says. So look at the religions. What did Christianity say? Christianity says because Jews schemed to kill our God, God got really pissed off. And he decided that rather than allowing Jews into heaven, rather than having Jews be the chosen people, Jews are now the enemy. They allied with Satan. They tried to kill me. In fact, they did. They killed me. Well, of course, it was all a lie. The Jews had nothing to do with it. It was the Romans that killed. And it wasn't a Jesus because he never existed. It was Dode, and he wrote the whole story 1,000 years before he endured it. So that nothing was true. But the religion of Christianity is based upon replacement foolology. And the foolology is to take every promise away from Jews and apply it to Gentiles. No support for that. In fact, there are thousands of prophecies that said that's dead ass wrong. But you know, in matters of faith, evidence and reason doesn't matter, even if the evidence and reason comes from God himself. But Christianity exists to take everything away from Jews, to demonize them, to make them such that it is appropriate to kill them, to steal from them, to torture them, to subjugate them, to plunder them, to degrade them, to annihilate them, and smile while you do it. That's the nature of Christianity. It robbed the Gentiles of knowing that Dode was the Messiah and the Son of God, that he fulfilled Pesach, Matzah and Makorim. Then you look at Judaism. Rather than acknowledge again that Dode is the Messiah and the Son of God, the returning king, they fought one false Messiah by foisting another. As if two lies somehow make this right. And nothing has been more harmful to Jews than this lie, because it took them even further away from the recognition of what Father and Son have accomplished for you. And it led to your disbursement out of the land and ultimately to the Holocaust. And you still cling to that religion that has so degraded you. It's a cancer from the very inside. tearing you apart. And it was the rabbis who sold Talmud readings to Muhammad that made the Quran possible. Without rabbis selling Talmud readings to Muhammad, the Quran is about that thick and it's got nothing. Bunch of regurgitated poems from Yemenite Arab conversions to Judaism. Following a god named Ar-Rahman. That's all it would have been. Nothing more. But the substance of the Quran is the Talmud stories that rabbis recited to Muhammad for money. And then when they laughed at him for getting them all fouled up, because they are really twisted in the Quran. And when he stopped paying them, they had a conniption fit. And Muhammad realized, well, I'm a thug. The easiest way to stop this is just to kill them. Dead men tell no tales. The Quran turns anti-Semitic because of the way rabbis responded after they had sold their Talmud readings to Muhammad and he butchered them. And then they mocked him. And then Muhammad annihilated them, perpetrating genocide on the Jews of Arabia, all because of the rabbis. They created this enemy, and they won't even stand up today to defend you against the monster they made. Your loyalty, your esteem for, your belief in rabbis, Israel, is your undoing. Of course, then there's the legacy of the religion that Hasatan and the nonprofit Muhammad, the worst man who ever lived, a pedophile, a rapist, misogynist, slave trader, mass murderer, sadist, man who committed all manner of incest, who admitted that he was a liar, who admitted that he was demon-possessed, a man who led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, who began by butchering his own family before he turned on Jews. This religion is the one that haunts you to this day. Yes, Hasatan is focused on a single ethnicity, the heel, Jacob. That's why the book of Ezekiel presents 25 ways to kill a Jew. That's why Islam is focused on anti-Semitism and mass murder of Jews. It's all right there. We haven't even left the third chapter of Bereshith, Genesis, and God's told you the whole story. Why am I the first person to explain it to you? In 3,400 years. I'm looking at you. I'm waiting for an answer. Oh, I'm sorry. The camera doesn't talk. But I know you're silent. Satan's reputation as Hasatan, the adversary, was clearly imposed by Yahweh. It gives him that distinction right in this text. People say, oh, Satan's not named here. Oh, yeah, he is. What do you think God meant by wa iba? What do you think hostility, animosity, enmity, adversarial, dislike, rancor, bitterness, and ill will means? Yeah. He was called the adversary. What is adversary in Hebrew? Satan. What is Hasatan? The adversary. And in it, his most debilitating penalty is the one thing Satan must overcome to prevail, because he does not want to be known as Hasatan. And so every religion presents Hasatan as the adversary of their God. That way their God, who is really Hasatan, has the ability to shut down and demean and denounce the title that he doesn't want. He doesn't want to be known as Hasatan. So in every religion, the Lord God is at war with Hasatan. Of course, Satan is. He doesn't want to be the adversary. He wants to be God. And he has achieved that agenda. It is why we find repetitive criticisms of Satan in the religions which feature the Lord as God. When Yahweh ascribed the term Baal, the Lord, to Satan. This is actually Satan attempting to rebuke his adversary title while ascribing to himself another title, the Lord, that Yahweh directly ascribes to Satan. And you who are religious aren't bright enough to figure that out. Not with all of your seminaries, with all of your yeshivas, with all of your madrasas. None of you have been smart enough to figure that one out. Satan is actually attempting to rebuke his adversary title that he disdains by accepting the title that Yahweh gave the Lord to the adversary. Come on. Yahweh conveyed this essential message to us using Bayan. Those willing to carefully consider God's teaching regarding Satan and make the proper connections to understand his ambition and to approach will come to understand his role in religion. Bayan is, well, it's the word that brings all of it together. It is the word where if we make the proper connections and associations, we can go from reading the text, which I have done for you, to understanding the text. To understanding the implications of the text. That's why when we do these programs, 10% of the time I'm sharing what I have written to you, and 90% of the time I'm sharing what it means to you. That comes from BN. To yada is to know what God said, which very few people do these days. It's a good start. It's an important start. That's why the book series that this particular volume is found in is called Yada, Yahweh, to know Yahweh. But Bien is the next step. Bien is where real magic happens. Bien is where we are expanded, where we're enlightened, where we're enriched, where we're empowered, where we're enabled. Because while knowledge has value, understanding may be the most powerful force and the universe. I can make a very bold statement here related to Bien. There are, in a world of 8 billion people, there are 2 billion Muslims. Of those 2 billion Muslims, I know Yada Islam better than probably 99% of them. But of the 8 billion people in our world, I Bien Islam better than any of them. I am the foremost authority in the world when it comes to Bien, the religion of Islam. And I prove it in goddamn religion. There are just shy of 3 billion Christians. Of those, I know the religion of Christianity better than 99% of them. I understand the religion better than anyone on earth, and by a wide margin. I prove that in Twistianity, the 5 volumes. The reason that's important to you is that these are Satan's most popular tools to use against God's people. Now, I cannot claim that I know Judaism better than 99% of Jews. It's just not possible. Those that are deep into Judaism spend virtually every waking moment studying the arguments that Jews have made to show you the 10,000 ways you can do nothing on a Shabbat, or the 100,000 ways that you can't mix dairy and meat, or the millions of ways you must honor the rabbi even when they say things that are really stupid. A waste of time to know it. The thing that matters with Judaism is to understand how this religion has been so contrary to God's people and how the religion is so contrary to God's testimony in the Torah and prophets. And of that, I began better than anyone who has ever lived. There's a reason that Yahweh has asked me to join Elia as the final witness. I know these three beasts, and I know the beast of progressive libertardism and the consequence of it better than anyone who has ever walked this earth. And while those are essential things for you to know, because all of them have to be pushed out of the way, that guy on the back of me, the very top with the blue arms and the blue head, he's not holding up the world. I'm no interest to do that. He's pushing the world away. He's pushing the adversarial influences of politics and religion and militarism and deceit away. I must do that for you to see the truth. But the thing that I began more than anything since Dode 3,000 years ago is I began Yahweh. I began Yahweh, which is why he has asked me to speak to you. Because Yahweh wants you to yada him and then began. That's our deal. That's why I'm here. And I want to thank you for listening. This is a natural place for us to conclude. Episode 13B, or we shall call it episode 14, of In the Garden, and so much more, as part of the Yahweh blog. I am Yada, also Craig Wynn. And I thank you for listening.